Broadcasting from the Gulag city of planet Earth, this is Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. My name is Dean Becker, our engineer is Steve Nolan, and our guest tonight will be retired judge Eleanor Shockett. First up tonight, I want to expose my thoughts to the listeners. My Drug Truth Network audience is likely the antithesis of those that listen to Rush Limbaugh. On a good week, I'm lucky if I get 1% of the listeners Rush gets. And yet, I would like to open a dialogue, a challenge, and a series of offers to Rush Limbaugh and his listeners. First off, I keep saying that the drug war is over. I tell my listeners that the drug warriors, the other side, the ones who want drug prohibition to last forever, are helpless. They are out of scientific fact. Their supply of informational ammunition is gone. There is no hope they will be resupplied. They do continue to dominate with bluster and an occasional bayoneting of the wounded, but the battlefield is ours. We have won. All that is necessary is that we enter the field of battle. But again, like Rush's listeners, most drug users are nice people, willing to search for compromise. The violence, gangs, overdose deaths, and juvenile drug use are not caused by drugs. They are caused by drug prohibition. We know that. We appreciate and understand that. And we realize that the supposed intent is diametrically opposed, 180 degrees opposite from the tragic results. Our first offer and challenge? We have at our disposal the means to cut the U.S. crime rate in half. In just one year, would you be willing to consider our proposals? On a local note that has strong implications for the whole Drug Truth Network audience, the justice system of Harris County, Houston, Texas, is broken, about as broken as is possible to get. We have corrupt cops taking bribe money to stand guard over establishments that sell drugs, underage girls, and alcohol to juveniles. Our outgoing police chief left under a cloud, carrying his baggage of a massive and unconstitutional drug sting and his complicity in the Houston crime lab scandal. And despite the protestations of the city council, he got a fat pay raise to take into retirement thanks to fellow officer in blue, Lee Brown. Our outgoing mayor, one Lee Brown, a longtime law enforcement officer and chief of police in Houston and New York, was also once the U.S. drug czar. He, too, knew about the bungling crime lab, and yet he did nothing, nothing at all. We have a district attorney who runs roughshod over the police department and who fights tooth and nail against all the local judges to oversee the investigation of his own department regarding the crime lab he permitted to become a national disgrace. The crime lab, run by an ever-obedient and yet hopelessly inept, leading the overworked and uneducated through a minefield which included equipment and samples exposed to weather and a grand failure of policy and procedure. And this is the prime example of what is wrong with the drug war. Murders, entrapment, armed assault, and faulty, if not fraudulent, convictions based on the rote response of untrained technicians. Any crime is allowed if you can frame the situation somehow by mentioning one word, drugs. For the upcoming mayoral runoff elections here in Houston, there should be one primary focus for the candidates, Orlando Sanchez and Bill White. How will you ensure criminal justice in our city? What will you do about the thousands of potentially fraudulent drug cases that have sent thousands of Harris County citizens to prison for tens of thousands of man years? If these lab techs could not be trusted to expertly handle these samples in the first place, how can we now justify these incarcerations? Broken, perverse, and irretrievable. That is justice in America when it comes to drugs. The truth is most evident here in Houston, Texas. Anything is permitted if it will save just one child, right? What do you say, Orlando and Bill? I'm going to want to hear from you in the near future. Okay, I'm proud to bring in tonight's guest, one of a series of guests we've been bringing to Culture Baggage. She's another member of LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and I'm proud to welcome tonight's guest, Judge Eleanor Shockett.
Thank you.
Good evening, Judge Shockett. How are you?
Doing just fine, thank you.
Yes, ma'am. It was quite wonderful to get a chance to meet you up in New Jersey a couple of weeks back for the conference. And if you would, for my listeners, tell them of your history on the bench.
Well, I was a circuit court judge in Dade County, Florida, for 12 years. I spent a little over a year of that time on the family bench, on the criminal bench, but 5 years on family and about six in general jurisdiction. But when I came to the criminal bench, and I went back during the middle of my service in circuit for a while, I had never tried a criminal case in my life. I had never gone in to criminal court. I didn't know the rules of procedure. And the first day on the bench, I'm in criminal court, one of the biggest criminal court dockets in the country. I mean, Dade County, if you remember Miami Vice or CSI, you know we're an import area for a lot of drugs. And what I saw really made me sick. Because the problem that you talk about in Houston, I think you will probably find in every major metropolitan area to some degree or other.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. It's just become most glaring, I think, here in Houston.
We haven't had a lab scandal like you did. But what I saw is, I saw it from two ways. I saw an undermining of the entire judicial system by our so-called war on drugs, which I've said for years is the equivalent of a war in Vietnam. It was long since lost. My first introduction to this problem was back in 1957 or 58 when I was at Tulane Law School and wrote my senior paper on the administration of drug laws. When I was doing that paper, 50% of crime was related either directly or indirectly to the use of drugs. Now, I just saw a recent figure that said it's up to 75%. We've lost it. What we need to do is sit down and talk about how we resolve the problem, because I was listening to your intro and what you had to say, and you're absolutely right. The problem is not the drug addict. The problem is the dealer. So we need to get the dealer out of the loop, and we need to trust the addicts. If any of these people will go down to the, what we used to call them were the calendars in criminal court in the morning, and look at the bad guys that they bring in, believe me, there are a few really bad guys there. But by and large, you'll find a lot of people that are sick, that are old, that are not too bright, and these are the people that are being tried for drug crimes. Rarely do you see the big guy, because they try to turn the big guy. And the stat, all they seem to be interested in are their stats. But I saw something else when I sat in criminal court and also when I was in civil court. And that is the largest number of victims of crime in this country are the poor and the working poor, the people that can afford it the least. The guy who works at a minimum wage job, doesn't live in a very nice neighborhood, and his neighbor who's got a drug problem sees his new DVD or sees his new television, and he breaks in his house and takes the television and sells it for two rocks. In my house, A, the TV, I live in a secure neighborhood, B, it's insured, C, it's paid for. This guy may still be paying for something that's stolen. And it's the little old ladies that get hit over the head when the Social Security check comes in because some guy needs to get a hit. And it's the cases, the civil cases, you can't get to trial because too many judges are trying these so-called drug cases. So I like to look at it from an overall view of what it is doing to our society. We in LEAP like to say, you can get over an addiction, but you can't overcome a conviction.
So true, Judge Shockett. I've spent some times at visiting the courts here in Harris County, and oftentimes I see a different mixture. I see young black and Latino boys, if you will, 17, 18, 19, 20 mm-hmm. years old, all in their orange jumpsuits, shackled together, and coming through and getting hearings, instant hearings, if you will, over a possession of a quarter ounce, a quarter gram.
Oh, it's a waste of everybody's time, and it's a waste of everything good, and it's a waste of lives. And I sat in Dade County. 70% of the estimated drug users are estimated to be white. And I will tell you, the first year I sat on the bench, except for two college kids who had a marijuana arrest for a little bit, and we're going to go to drug court. I didn't see any white folks. I saw primarily blacks and Hispanics.
I think your associate, Jack Cole, he made a statement to me at the conference that federal prisoners, blacks, are 60% of those in prison, though they represent only 13% of the population.
Well, that's because I used to go out on by bus, and I used to go out in places with the police, you know. They didn't go to white neighborhoods.
Right, right.
And these white folks, like Rush Limbaugh, are getting their drugs somewhere. And sometimes they bring their problems into the black neighborhoods. And those neighborhoods don't want them any more than the white neighborhoods do, or the affluent neighborhoods.
Right. It's just where the focus is. Racial profiling is much involved in this drug war.
You know what it is? It's easier that way. You don't have to work as hard to find somebody in a black neighborhood.
Well, that's the truth, because just the nature of it, they tend to focus on the easy targets. You're right. Judge Schockett, some folks may not know what law enforcement against prohibition is. I mean, this is a collection of judges, district attorneys, mayors, policemen.
Well, if they want to find out more about LEAP, the easiest way to do it is to go to leap.cc on the Internet, and they can get a copy of our mission statement, which we're here to educate the public, the media, and policymakers to the failure of the current drug policy by presenting a true picture of the history, causes, and effects of drug abuse and drug-related crimes. We have a speakers bureau that goes out to various civic clubs. We want to restore the public's respect for law enforcement, and we want to reduce the harm that is being done to the citizens of the United States. And to our Constitution, I may add, by ultimately ending drug prohibition. Now, what we want to do is get rid of the drug dealer so that we can... You can't control something you have banned. And we have given over the control and regulation of the drugs to the bad guy, the drug dealer, who is motivated by nothing more than profit. So we need to set up an alternative mission to provide for the medical needs of those people who have a drug problem. Now, one of the things that most people don't realize is that over 50% of the people who use drugs have what is known as a dual diagnosis. They have been diagnosed as being severely depressed or having other either physical or mental health problems. And we don't provide, we could use the money we're using on this so-called war to provide mental health care and medical care for people who can't afford it and are not forced to go into the illegal market to get what they need. Now, when I was at the conference and we're talking about the Drug Alliance, Drug Policy Alliance meeting, I met a young woman who is 33 years old and has 6 children under the age of 8.
Wow.
She also suffers from chronic Crohn's disease. At one time, she was 5'7" and weighed 145 pounds. She is still 5'7", but weighs only 112. If people are not familiar with Crohn's disease, it's one of the intestinal tract, makes it very hard to hold down food. This woman needs marijuana to survive, and she can't get it. Except that her husband has to go out in the illegal market and buy it for her. This, to me, is outrageous.
But to enter the black market, to risk potential violence, to pay exorbitant prices for something that...
For a life-saving drug. And, the people at the other end that are very badly impacted by this, the ill and the elderly. The elderly are impacted in many ways. First of all, they're suffering more diseases and things that evoke pain. but they can't get the proper pain medication. I mean, you can't even get it if you're dying in some places. Now, why anybody should be worried that you get addicted to a drug, I don't know. Because the ridiculous part about that is that when you're taking drugs for pain, they're not necessarily addictive, but people can function while they use drugs on a daily basis as long as they can get a reasonably safe supply and know what they're taking. The young mother said one of the worst parts about not being able to get legal marijuana is that she never knows what dose she's taking because she never knows the quality or the percentage of the THC and what she's taking.
Yes, yes, Judge, I close my show with a statement to that effect, that be careful, you don't know what's in that bag.
I don't use drugs, never have, don't have a problem with them, but my feeling is that for people that need them or people that want them, they should be able to get them, because I can't find a rational basis for discriminating between the tobacco and alcohol user and the marijuana or even the cocaine user.
Judge Shockett, we're going to take just a quick little break.
Marijuana may not cause the overdose deaths like heroin, but it's just as dangerous.
For thousands of years, marijuana has been known as an appetite stimulant and for its ability to prevent nausea.
It's time to play Name That Drug by its side effects. Chest pain, dark yellow or brown urine, shortness of breath, skin rash, unusual tiredness or fatigue, headache, diarrhea or constipation, flatulence, nausea and vomiting. Time's up. The answer, Nexium,
the little purple pill.
Another FDA-approved product.
This is Mark Greer, Executive Director of Drug Sense. You're listening to Cultural Baggage. To end the drug war, visit MAPINC.org. That's MAPINC.org. Get active, stay aware, stay informed, and let's bring an end to this nonsense.
Judge Shockett,
You know, that I listened to what you were playing, and you've got quite a sense of humor there. You're right. But to the guy that talked about the drug dealers,
yes.
Let me tell you that the goal of LEAP is to get rid of every illegal drug dealer. And we believe that the best way to do it is take the profit out. Make the risk too great for the return. And you know something? You do that for a year and you don't have a drug trade anymore.
You're absolutely right. The violence in America...
violence is a result of the profit. And the violence is not generally generated by users. It's by the dealers. And the big dealers have sense enough not to use.
Right.
So let's not have a war against drug users. Let's have it against the drug dealers. Because I went to the University of Alabama back in the 1950s.
Yes.
And in Economics 101, you know what they taught me?
What's that?
They taught me that demand drives supply, not the other way around. So if you want to get rid of the drug dealers, all you have to do is get rid of the demand for their product, and they're out of business. It's like anything else.
It's the world's largest multi-level marketing organization is what we have now.
Right. And guess what our war in Afghanistan did?
I've been hearing
stories. I was looking at Nightline the other night. They had a program on the poppy fields. Production of poppies in Afghanistan has gone through the roof. I think it's up 100 times what it was during the Taliban.
Judge Shockett, I'm looking at a story here from the New York Times by Nicholas Kristof. He says it soared 19-fold and become the major source of the world's heroin.
Right. And now what we need to do is take it out of the hands of those people. And we've got too many people in prison. I mean, it's obscene. We're destroying too many lives. The problem only gets worse. What are they going to do? We don't have enough money to build the right schools and educate our children. Why on earth would we want to spend our limited resources on building prisons?
Judge Shockett, I did some calculations just yesterday when I was doing my 420 shows, and we have given the drug lords and the criminals of every stripe, but at $400 billion a year, we've given them at least $10 trillion over the last 30 years.
Yeah, and it's time to stop it. Now, the question is, why can't we? Well, we can't. The politicians don't want to even talk about it. If we're going to change this policy, we're going to have to come up through the service clubs in this country. The Kiwanis, the Elks, the Rotary, people like that who can go to their legislature, who are salt-of-the-earth type folks, who can go to the legislature and say, I'm tired of you wasting my money. The least we can do is get to the table and talk about it.
And
don't just push me off and say, no, we got to be tough on crime. Let me tell you, there are two people I don't vote for. I don't vote for people that say they're going to be tough on crime, because having sat on the bench, I know they don't know what the hell they're talking about. And I don't vote for people that tell me they're going to cut my taxes until they tell me what services they're going to cut along with it. Because I don't want them to cut the budgets for my schools.
Right. There's better ways to spend our money than pouring billions after tens of billions down the drain.
I'll tell you a place we could spend it, because I saw from the bench that I know it exists. And that's Medicare fraud. And I'm not talking about an overbilling here or something there. I am talking about these phony clinics where they steal Medicare cards and they bill out hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions. I had a case once where this guy had two clinics that were defrauding Medicare of $250,000 a month in each one.
Wow.
And I sent the records over to the FBI. I don't know if they ever did anything about it.
It wasn't big enough to catch their eye, perhaps.
Well, I don't know what it is. But, you know, we closed down the government. During the Clinton administration, the government was closed down on the battle over how to fund Medicare.
Yes.
If you cut down the fraud in Medicare, you would have enough money to provide full cradle-to-grave medical care for every man, woman, and child in the United States, including prescription care, without raising taxes.
Yes,
now, why they want to go and create a problem that shouldn't exist because somebody is trying to tell somebody else what they should be putting in their body. I mean, it's absolutely absurd to me for a legislator to go out and be drinking and smoking and then go in and vote for a bill that bans the makes smoking marijuana illegal. I mean, there's not a rational discrimination between vices, if that's what you want to call them. And in the field of tobacco, I think it's marvelous to see how you can reduce a problem. I was speaking to a group, Institute of Retired Professionals. These are older professional people. And we were chatting briefly, and I said to them, and there must have been 60 people in the room, how many of y'all smoked at one time? And I would say 80% of the people raised their hand. And then I asked them, well, how many of you are smoking now? Not one.
Wow.
Not one.
And none of them had to go to prison to break their habit, did they?
Right. They really didn't. In this country, it's no longer really socially acceptable or glamorous or cool to smoke tobacco, which is a good thing because of the tremendous medical burden it places on us for people that insist on smoking. But how much more would it would cost if you tried to put them in jail? And why should you put a tobacco smoker out and keep a marijuana smoker in?
It makes no sense. No one's ever died from marijuana. 400,000 die from tobacco every year.
Well, there was an interesting thing to me. Somebody once told me that the lethal dose of water is 2 quarts in an hour. I didn't know there was a lethal dose of water.
There was actually a gentleman that did a college fraternity prank, whatever they call it.
Yeah,
he drank too much water.
I saw that in the paper the other day.
It just happened. Water OD'd this gentleman. We need to be careful what we... Well, as you said, prohibition just doesn't work.
I'm the kind of person that likes to be in control. Now, I am not so arrogant as to say that we have all the answers as to how to resolve this problem, but I do know that what we have is not working I do know that people of goodwill should sit down together and figure out how we're going to change this policy. I do know that there are an awful lot of people in prison that shouldn't be there, and I don't want to pay for them to stay.
You're so right.
And some of them were wrongfully convicted. I mean, it's not that they were just convicted under a bad law.
Well, there is a lot of testifying in court by police officers. I've seen
testifying. Hey, I like that. Never heard that before.
Yes, ma'am. I think I got that from someone else, but it is.
I think it sounds like something they'd come up with in LEAP.
Could well be. Now, we've got about a minute and a half, 2 minutes. Let's do tell the folks again about y'all's website, where it is.
All right. Our website is www.leap, that's L-E-A-P, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, .cc. Now, the CC sort of gets people because I had never heard of it before I got onto LEAP.
So it's leap.cc.
Leap.cc.
And you can hook up to even some of the former Cultural Baggage radio shows are available there with guests like Howard Wooldridge and...
What you will find there are all of our speakers' bureaus with some biographies, so you'll know where we're coming from. We not only have speakers, but we also have members who are not in law enforcement. They're called Friends of LEAP, and people can join and support what we're doing. And so I would urge y'all to do that because we need all the help we can get. We can send out speakers, but we're limited by our budget. But most of the, there are very few, there are several judges on the advisory council. But I quite frankly think our members who were formerly in law enforcement, like Jack Cole, who was an undercover drug agent for a number of years, come forth with the greatest credibility. Howard, I know, was doing investigations and work like that. These folks know that it's not working. And when police officers, I'll tell you somebody else who knows. The judges know.
Yes, ma'am. I've had one of your members, Judge James P. Gray, on, and he's quite wonderful as well. Judge Shockett, we're going to have to leave it right there. I appreciate you joining us on Cultural Baggage.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. As we approach the holiday season, we salute Susan Wells and Scott Beezer, the author of A Drug War Carol. Their story is 2% Charles Dickens for the premise and 98% open, valid truths about the beginning and perpetration of the drug war. You can read this story at adrugwarcarol.com. It's presented in wonderfully done comic strip format. A delight for all ages. So this week we name Susan Wells and Scott Beezer as Drug War Heroes of the Week. And as always, I remind you, because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag. Please, be careful.
For the Drug Truth Network, and on behalf of my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston.